You are listening to an action-packed episode of the Punk News Podcast, Punk News Podcast number 291. Yes, and we are back. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we have got a jam-packed episode of the Punk News Podcast for you tonight. Let me tell you, January and February, they're always kind of slow months, not a whole lot happening, but let me tell you, listeners out there, a ton of things happening this week. We might not even get to it all, but we're going to be talking about the Ottawa explosion. We're going to be talking about Foo Fighters not breaking up. We're going to be talking about the greatest band of all time, the Melvins. We're going to be talking about one of the greatest punk guys of all time, Jesse Michaels, and his new movies. We're going to be talking about one of the not-so-nice bands of all time, Hatebreed, and their drummer murdering people. We're going to be talking about one of the most controversial bands of the year, AJJ. We're going to be talking about one of the sweetest bands of the year, Lacera. We're going to be talking about one of the dorkiest bands of the year, Nerf Herder. And we're going to be talking about one of the most nerdy bands of the year, Devo, donating money to Free Lions. And here with me tonight, podcast producer, podcast editor, the singer to the youth, the teacher to the youth, the Aristotle. No, I'm sorry, the Socrates to the modern-day Aristotle. We are here with podcast producer Greg Simpson. Greg Simpson, your wife is out of the country. What are you doing to bide your time?
Crying. No, it's International Women's Day today, so this won't be posting on International Women's Day, but I'm like, my woman is international. Like, what the fuck? Like, how ironic is that? She's left me, but she's coming back, flying into Chicago tomorrow night. She thinks she's going to drive back to Lafayette 2.5 hours, but she's probably going to be exhausted. So I'll probably see her Thursday morning. So I'm happy about that.
What have you been doing, Greg?
What have I been doing? What haven't I been doing? Well, we recorded 3 Best Midwesterns in the span of 4 days. So we did that. I've got my Bowie band. I've got, even though my wife is in Outdoor Velour, we've got some tracks I've been working on by myself. And my other band, bands, basically, to sum it up.
Well, there you have it, the band man on the lam. And we are also here with the Chiefy Weefy, the big boss man, the sensible Sigmund to my manic Marx, if that makes any sense. We are here with managing editor Adam White. Adam White, what's happening up there in Canada? How are you doing this week? Did you make it through your week of pestilence and plague?
I think. I'm still here. My answer to Greg's quandary, if my wife was away and I guess my kids were away, is that I would just be probably walking around naked with a bottle of wine. But you and me are different people. You're trying to do something productive. You're making music, not just drinking naked. So, good on you.
I don't drink at all. So there's the naked thing I would do, but I don't drink.
But you're also never nude, so you're never actually naked. So
right.
Adam, if you were doing that, would it be like cool and sensual, like, hello, ladies, won't you join me for some Chardonnay? Or would it be like the crazy hobo down the street without any pants?
Hobo.
this is a true story. One time when I went to graduate school or law school, there's a 7-Eleven right across the street from campus. It's a nice 7-Eleven. But my first week in Santa Clara, when I was walking past it to go to classes, there was a hobo jacking off right at the 7-Eleven out in the middle of the street. FYI.
I caught a guy jerking it in a truck stop one time, right in like into the urinal. I don't know if he finished, but he was there, doing whatever, looking around at the other dudes. And so I went out and told it was 2 ladies working at the register. I told them, I'm like, do you have any like big dudes that could go in there and make him stop?
Adam, what, have you ever caught a guy minding his own biz?
No, I feel blessed. I've led a charmed life, apparently. I haven't had to deal with this.
Well, listen, speaking of jacking it, let's read some mail.
Always just jacking it.
We got some mail. We got some mail. This is from Jake. This is Jake's opinion on the Metallica being part of Record Store Day. Jake says, I think it's cool that Metallica is representing Record Store Day. In the early 80s metal scene, their records were some of my favorite records. So I think it's cool that they are representing Record Store Day 2016. That's from Jake. There you guys have it. Okay.
Moving on.
I never know what to say about Metallica. I've known my entire life, I've never known what to say about Metallica in any context. I'm just going to leave it at that because I don't have anything to say.
The only thing I ever say about Metallica is how they won / lost the loudness wars with their album Death Magnetic by mastering it fucking horribly loud. That's all I ever really knew about them. Fry, shut up. I can cut that out.
And that's Greg's
individual tracks.
Get off.
Okay.
And that's Greg fighting with his cat. And this is from Lauren. Lauren says, I think punk rock is a state of mind, not necessarily a sound or even a style of music. That's why I think you should cover Brian Fallon. I think he embodies what it is to be punk rock. And that's from Lauren.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to cut him off. Someone popped on Twitter and they really liked my argument apparently about basketball or whatever the fuck I was talking about with regards to that. But even as I was making that argument, as good as an argument as I thought it was, I also kind of said that like we shouldn't cover like I don't know, like Bob Mould,
Michael and, Jordan.
Michael Jordan, like Bob Mould and like Paul Westerberg and things like that. And I totally want to cover those people. So yep. Didn't make any sense. So yeah, we'll probably keep talking about Brian Fallon.
Well, as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail, so be sure to write us. Adam White, what's happening up there in Ottawa? Is there some boom booms going down?
There is. This is part of a segment of this show that I call Adam Reads News that he should have written for Punk News, but hasn't because he's lazy. And it's easier just to talk about it on the show. So the Ottawa Explosion, it's coming up. The Ottawa Explosion weekend in particular, it's happening on June 15th through the 19th up in the capital of this snowy nation that I live in. And the lineup so far is really cool. There is going to be a Don Giovanni Records showcase at this thing featuring the Screaming Females along with Vacation Warriors and Shell Shag. They've announced the first kind of like handful of bands playing this, and you've got Black Tower playing it, which is the kind of like the side project of the Crusades guys. You have Century Palm on there, Nervosas, Nightbirds are there. As I said, Screaming Females, Soup Cans are playing, the Steve Ademic Band, Strange Attractor. It's a cool amount of band. This is always an insane amount of really weird garage bands that always end up being pulled together for this. And so far, this lineup looks really neat, and I really want to go to this. I don't know if I can, but it's something I'm going to try to do. Bears mentioning here because, you know, if you are looking for like a list of some of the weirdest, craziest lo-fi bands that you can find, you know, if you're trying to scratch that itch, go to the Ottawa Explosion website and just start listening to past acts that have played that show because that festival, because there's always stuff in there that it's just crazy. All these bands that just like release nothing but strange sounds on tape and things like that. So let's play one of those. This isn't too weird though. This is pretty punk rock. So I'm gonna play a band for you. They are from Vancouver, BC, I believe. They are called the Drearies. This is from an album that they released, and by album I probably mean tape, called Eugene back in 2014. And this song in particular is called Potato Man. So this is the Drearies with Potato Man. Let's talk about some of the stuff that happened this week. Greg, kick us off with some Foo Fighters news.
The Foo Fighters are breaking, I mean, not breaking up, despite internet reports, quote unquote. Okay, they released this video that is hilarious. It is 7 minutes long, basically showing how they would possibly break up if they did break up. And then at the end, it's like, listen, we're not fucking breaking up. So, I mean, I don't know, just a bunch of tweets. It does like the spiral newspaper thing at the beginning, which I think is hilarious. And did you guys like it? I thought it was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, I thought this was, honestly, I'm not a Foo Fighters. I don't like any of the Foo Fighters songs. I think the Foo Fighters are a boring rock band. And I don't know how they came to represent modern rock. I just think they're not a good band. But this video is funny. And it does go to show why people think Dave Grohl is so affable. It's the band making fun of themselves, like playing up to all these cliches. And like the Dave Grohl solo, like hip-hop slash techno track slash R&B song. It is a perfect parody of what many bands, some that we talk about on the Punk News Podcast, actually do. And I guess the interesting point is sometimes Punk News gets chastised. Punk News, how come you didn't report on this like everyone else did right away? Well, because a lot of the stuff on the internet now is false and things spin wildly out of control. You know, back in the 70s, if you read some of these interviews from the 70s, from Rolling Stone in the 70s, or Melody Maker, or Cream from the 70s, bands say the most outrageous things, like, you know, Keith Richards will say, I hate Mick Jagger, or whatever. And if that were today, the Stones would have broken up 100 times, according to the internet. But because it was the 70s, and the internet didn't exist, like people just said stuff and it just kind of faded away. So I think it's interesting how on the internet kind of represents that what people say doesn't mean anything at all because it happens so quickly. But on the other hand, it sort of represents when you say things, it sticks around forever and is attached to you and held to you because everyone can see it right away and it can't get buried away in some magazine. So I don't think there's any real deep meaning here. I think just the main thing is that the internet is like fire. Once something catches on, people run with it like crazy. And it just goes to show that just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. Just because someone's accused of something or isn't accused of something or someone said somebody did something doesn't necessarily mean it's true. That lesson is as old as Aesop himself, but it still holds true.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, what do you think, Adam? Greg,
I had something relating to that. I have a question for you two. So you were talking about the 70s and then like today and how it's different. I want to split the difference there because there was a rumor I remember going around in the late 90s, early aughts that Roger, the bass player of Less Than Jake, had died. And this was going around at least, I don't know if it was just the Chicago area, for a couple weeks we weren't sure. And I mean, sure, the internet was around, but it was maybe slower and there weren't as many comment sections and Twitter wasn't around yet. I mean, Facebook wasn't around yet. Did that ever get your directions or was this something that just happened purely in Chicago? Did you ever hear that?
I was a big Less Than Jake fan at that time in particular, and I do not recall that at all.
Yeah, it's weird.
I remember seeing him on a few Warped Tours during that era, and he kind of looked like he wanted to die, but he was not.
Yeah, this would have been, Hello Rock View, maybe like a year after that. I don't know, but we were like all distraught over it because we fucking loved them too. And then I don't even remember how we eventually found out it was false, but it was like, it was online someplace, but shit didn't spread like it does today because social media was fucking nothing, you know? So that's kind of something in between what John was talking about where, there's the internet and stuff can spread, but it wasn't the internet today. Like how much the internet has changed in the past 15, 16 years.
You know, that was funny because that thing I just mentioned about the Warped Tour, that was one of those like moments when I was a young person and I realized that like, no, all the musicians who are in your favorite bands are not having a good time all the time.
Well, it's Warped Tour.
We like, I remember like we had seen like Less Than Jake a million times, and you see a band like that back in the Sky era, and they're just dancing around, having fun, and everything like that. And then the one year in Toronto, we ran into Roger kind of walking around, and like he looked like he had been hit by like three trains. Like if smoke could be coming off of him, that smoke would have been coming off of him. And it was just like he was miserable as shit and he just looked like hell. And it was, then we were just like, we're like, oh, like everything isn't a party all the time. Yeah. Sometimes you look like that.
Like if you talk to Scott Heisel, I mean, he's been on Legs of Warp Tour, you know, as like, you know, a dude running the AP booth, or I don't know if he's gone for Substream yet, but yeah, it kind of fucking sucks. I mean, if you're one of the bigger bands and you've got like your own bus and all the shit that you've paid for because you've got money, like if you're NoFX doing Warped Tour back in the day, it's probably fine. You just go to your air-conditioned bus. But most of the guys, I mean, even less than Jake then, they hadn't signed to a... Were they on a major? I don't know. Either way, they're walking around in the sun all day, every day for like 2 months. I mean, I like going outside.
With a bunch of horrible bands.
With a bunch of horrible bands and people that are coming up to you constantly wanting to take a picture, and you're just like, not again.
Yeah, that was definitely that. As far as this Foo Fighters video goes, I had this moment where I had to go to my wife and be like, Julie, is this Nick Lachey? Uh-huh. I was like, yes.
Dude, who is Nick Lachey?
98 Degrees. I paused it, like a true Simpsons fan, I paused it when they point to the list of possible replacements. They've got Sammy Hagar, Vince Neil, Steve Perry, Chris Martin, Scott Stapp from Creed, Billy Corgan, they mention, Nick Lachey from 98 Degrees, it says that whole thing. Bieber, Drake, Prince, Phil Collins.
He was a reality show star in that he was married to Jessica Simpson at one point.
Right. Oh, that's Nick Lachey?
No relation.
To
Jessica Simpson and me.
Oh, you. Oh, fuck. Your name is, yes, Greg is here. Okay.
Yep.
God damn it. All right.
I'm
really dense tonight. Let's tell you.
Good on Nick Lachey for being able to laugh at himself. That, you know, yeah. You know, like it's supposed to be silly that he would think to join Foo Fighters. You know, so good on him for, you know, being able to laugh at himself.
His rendition was pretty fucking awesome.
So I love that your cat is in this show. Please do not cut your cat out.
Okay.
So we are going to talk about another band that is at least on the Nick Lachey level, and they're the Melvins. So, what's that? Did you just have a heart attack? You okay?
Who, me? Yeah. I had a heart attack over the Melvins. I was going to say there's a secret connection between these two bands. Can you catch it?
What is the secret connection?
Wait, what? Between what two? Say it again.
The Melvins and Foo Fighters have 1 degree of separation.
Oh, I thought you meant the Melvins and Nick Lachey.
You mean
that like Novoselic's on this stuff?
Well, that too.
Cobain was a huge Melvins fan. I don't know. What are you getting at, John?
Here's what I'm getting at. Dave Grohl was a drummer for Foo Fighters. Dave Grohl was drummer for Nirvana. Dale Crover of the Melvins was a drummer for Nirvana, and the Melvins taught Kurt Cobain how to play his guitar.
Mm-hmm. I knew that last bit. Okay.
And everyone loves Dave Grohl, but Buzz Osborne hates him. And so I have to side with Buzz Osborne and hate him.
Oh boy.
They recently...
You're such an impressionable youth, John.
They have recently announced the release of a new album. That album is titled Three Men and a Baby. It's due out on April 1st via Sub Pop. And they have now announced another album in addition to that one. Another new album for 2016. On June 3rd, the band will release something called Basses Loaded on Ipecac Records. The album finds the band using different basses for different tracks, including the aforementioned Chris Novoselic of Nirvana. You got Steve McDonald of Red Cross, Butthole Surfers, J.D. Pincus, Big Business, Jared Warren, Mr. Bungle and Fontimus's Trevor Dunn. And you have the Melvins' own Dale Crover on there. So you have an album specifically with a whole bunch of different basses on it, which that is, I think, the first time I've heard that as the theme for an album. But anyways, you can find the track listing for the thing over on Punk News. There's 12 tracks on it. And there is a song you can preview. So you can preview the song Basses Loaded. So,
The song's
Hideous Woman. Hideous God Woman. Damn it. Okay, yes, I can't read either. John.
Yes,
why would the Melvins release an album with a bunch of different basses as the theme?
Oh, there's like an actual like a concept behind that. You know, I mean, I'm not being funny.
No.
You know the concept behind it?
Tell the people. Because if I don't know.
The Melvins. The Melvins are like Spinal Tap in that the Melvins have notoriously had difficulty keeping bassists in the band. So from 1983 through 2006, I think it was, they literally had like 7 bassists in the band because the bassists would either quit the band or fight with the band or get strung out on drugs. And so after 2006, Buzz Osborne and Dale Crover, the two main Melvins, they basically said, listen, and it's interesting, like Buzz Osborne talks about how like it was really wrenching and difficult for him to keep having to fire bassists or whatever because it was like both emotionally difficult but also practically difficult as well. So they said, well, from now on, we're never going to have a bassist in the band. We'll just have revolving bassists. And so for about 5 years, they actually had Jared Warren and Cody Willis of Big Business in the band. And people kind of assumed that was the newest lineup of the Melvins. But in reality, what it was is those guys were just, I guess, on loan for about 4 years. And then after that, the Melvins have just basically used a different bassist every tour and every album. They've used Trevor Dunn. They've used Pincus from Butthole Surfers. And so I guess the idea that the Melvins are doing is it's almost like a jazz concept in that, you know, like John Coltrane and Miles Davis?
What about Miles Davis?
Yeah.
Coltrane. He is a jazz musician.
Like Coltrane would play with all these different musicians. Miles Davis would play with all these different musicians. And so the Melvins are kind of doing the jazz thing in that all their records is in the same line. Like, generally, a rock band will have the same lineup on a record, but the Melvins are kind of doing the jazz thing where it's a different lineup on every record. And that in some ways, that makes more sense because you'll get a more varied, more contrasting sound instead of the same thing over and over and over. So this album is kind of the Melvins commenting on the fact that they've persistently had trouble holding on to a bassist, so they're just throwing it all out the window and just saying, well, we'll just record with a million different bassists. And so I'm excited for this, but there's two things to talk about here briefly. The first is, this is why it's so difficult to get into the Melvins, and this is why the Melvins are so awesome once you're into them. Every release by the Melvins almost has a concept behind it. Their album with Trevor Dunn was acoustic, with Trevor Dunn playing acoustic bass. Well, it wasn't acoustic. The bass was acoustic. Their albums with Big Business had two drummers on it. Their album, there was Melvins' 1983 album, where they reverted to their 1983 form and did songs like that. So every Melvins album is like a unique thing that's different from all the other ones. And so that makes it a lot of fun as a fan, because it's like, here's what's interesting about this release. As opposed to, say, I don't know, Bouncing Souls or whoever's like, here's another album. Here's another album. You know, here's another album. You know, whereas the Melvins are like, on this album, we've got an acoustic bass. On this album, we've got four people. You know, on this one, we've got half of the Butthole Surfers on the record. So it's crazy.
It's damn overwhelming. I don't like...
But that's exactly it, Greg. See, they're putting out two albums within a 2 month time span.
If I were in one of those labels, I would be pissed.
Well, see, I think they both know. I think they're both. Well, actually, and Three Men and a Baby is the Melvins with somebody else. That's Mike Kunk of Godhead Silo. But even as a fan, that's a lot to take in at once. It's like you want some time with the album so you can really absorb it. Can there be too much of a good thing with your favorite band?
Yeah, I would almost say yeah, because like. Okay, so we don't need to get into – we don't need to fight about the Melvins, you and I. We do that for no reason.
Greg, you don't like the Melvins?
What?
You don't like the Melvins?
We're going to get into this?
No, I'm asking you. You honestly don't like the Melvins?
I don't know. I'm not into –
get out of here.
I'm not that into heavy and sludgy stuff. But, for example, one of my favorite bands, and Mr. Joe Pallone, who I wish was – still with us. He's not dead, but he doesn't write for us anymore. The Mountain Goats.
Well, he does on a very relaxed schedule.
Yes, yes, because he's got the baby. Didn't slow Adam White down. He's dynamite Adam White. But anyway, Mountain Goats, we both love that fucking band. And that dude will put out an album every year. And I mean, even that's a rapid clip for bands these days. And then usually there's also some EP or some other special thing that comes out. And even stuff coming out, like let's say one comes out in October of a year and then one comes out in July the next year. Like, you know, there's only like a 10-month difference. And it's almost like, dude, I'm still digesting the last one. Yeah, you don't get that at all with this Melvin stuff, John?
Oh, I actually do. Believe it or not, not last year. Last year, the Melvins didn't actually put out any albums, but they put out a bunch of EPs. But the year before that, Greg, you know how many albums the Melvins put out in 2014?
2014 albums?
No, close. Five. They put out 5 full lengths in 2014. That was a lot to take in. So is it too much of a good thing? It kind of is, because you can't really absorb it all. But on the other hand, it's if as the fates decide, either you get it all or you don't get it, I'd rather have too much of it than not get it. You see what I'm saying?
One thing that I do like about it is that it shines a light on bass players who are often ignored.
Adam White, can one get too much of a good thing?
You know what? I thought about that, and I've gone back and forth with it. Because on the one hand, I feel that like I would really want a bunch of nonstop stuff from my favorite bands. On the other hand, I would be worried that it would start to become stuff of degrading quality. You know, the returns aren't good mm-hmm. anymore. I mean, and the Melvins are a little bit of a special case in that they're veterans, and they're always been just like creatively fearless. Like they're not doing the same thing exactly that they always have been doing, so that by, you know, they can release 5 EPs in a year and they can all end up sounding different, or they can all have different weird ideas on it. I mean, going back to the Bouncing Souls, who I love, it would be a problem if they released that much material in a year and it all sounded like the Bouncing Souls all the time, because that would get tiresome. So you know, I think it really depends on the band. And I think if you are a band that's sort of like as eclectic as the Melvins can be, then you can do it. So it totally depends. I'm going to go with that. Speaking of stuff, that was a good seg that I just did there. I really tried. Jesse Michaels, our buddy, our friend, he of Operation Ivy, he of Classics of Love, he of Kamen Rider. So the artiste extraordinaire, according to our record, and noted Hellhammer fan, he has noted that he has announced that he is going to write and direct a new short film. The film is going to be a short crime film, and it's going to be titled 5-4-3-2-1. It follows the story of a young woman whose brother is killed in a drug deal. She then decides to solve the murder herself. The film will be 5 chapters told in reverse chronological order. You can find a link to a promo to the film over at Punk News Right Now. And this follows a stream of other more abstract things that he has done recently. Like he had one that came out recently called Exploring. And then there was the ones before that. Were there not, John? What was that one with the paint?
The Yonke films. I love those so much.
Yeah, so what do you know about this? You seem to be on the ball with what's going on with him.
Well, here's what's happening with this: is Jesse Michaels now is getting into filmmaking, and I think he might have actually went to college for filmmaking, like recently, or if he didn't, he just wanted to get involved. He moved down to L.A., so I think that was a big part of it. He directed the Leftover Crack film, video rather, and he also directed another short film called Mr. Ripoff, which I can't seem to find anywhere. And so I think he's slowly building a resume with the hope of doing a feature film, and I mean, Adam, what you read is basically the plot. They haven't filmed it yet. He's actually gotten some semi-famous actors in the film, not ones that I know by their name, but I know by their face. Like maybe people that you would see played the murderer on CSI or something like that. You know, I guess you call them bit actors. Is that what you call that? Not character actors, but actors that you see on a lot of different TV shows, but they're not the star usually. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think this film is going to see Jesse Michaels' previous films. They've been so weird. And if you haven't seen Jesse Michaels' Yonke films or even Exploring, you should watch them, because they're so weird and so funny. And I love them. I think this film is going to be his attempt to make, I guess, a more traditional film or a less bizarre film, if you will. And I'm excited to see it. Like I've said before, Jesse Michaels, he's just one of these people that are next level. Everything he touches turns to gold. The music that he's made, I mean, not only has he been in one amazing band, one mind-blowing band, he's been in two mind-blowing bands, you know, Operation Ivy and Classics of Love, and Classics of Love, which was an excellent band. I mean, Kamen Rider, which was an excellent band. But not only that, is he's a wonderful painter, and he's making these hilarious films. I think I don't think he's even a musician. I think he's just an artist, and that art manifests its way in whatever way the muses allow it to. And I think I think Jesse Michaels feels somewhat constrained by that because most of his fans are probably in the music world. And so they're like, Jesse Michaels, make more music for us. Make more music for us. And that's not where he's at right now. And you can't blame him because, like I said, I do think Jesse Michaels is next level. And he can't just sit down and say, well, I'm going to write a song now. I think, and I could be wrong, that he's the kind of artist that has to create whatever just comes from him naturally, like a spring, and he doesn't get to pick what kind of art he wants to make.
Yeah, I think he might be on a song there. He seems like a cool dude. He's not going to be swayed by people badgering him to, like, you know, do whatever. And when, if you watch, did you guys watch the Kickstarter video on the on his thing?
Yeah, I did.
He says, like, right away, like, kind of begrudgingly, he's like, you might know me from my music. And then he mentions the bands. He's not like, hey, I'm the guy from Op Ivy. Hey, look at me. You know, he's like, well, I guess that's where you probably know me from. But he's got an ugly hairless cat. I think he's ugly.
I can understand where he's coming from with that. Is, you know, he was in Operation Ivy when he's 19. Greg, imagine being hammered or locked to your 19-year-old self for the rest of your life. Surely that would be exhausting. And it's doubly exhausting when Classics of Love was, I think, better than Operation Ivy.
Dang.
Adam, what do you think?
I would rather these days listen to Classics of Love than Operation Ivy, and that may just be because I've heard those Operation Ivy songs 7 billion times. But it's also a maturity thing, too, is that, you know, there's absolutely a time and place for what Op Ivy did, and there's a time and place, I think, to appreciate it. But, yeah, it's definitely, like, the work of young people, you know, so...
yeah, Unity! Have you guys ever seen Memento?
Is that backwards, yeah. Phil?
Did you not think of Memento when you read that? Chapters in reverse chronological order.
I actually thought of the Hellraiser ripoff Memento film, which is like Memento, but it's with Hellraiser.
That's a thing?
It's really bad. It's Memento, but with, I mean, you know what Hellraiser is, right? Yeah, it's Memento, but with Hellraiser, and it's really bad.
That's silly.
But I think it should be cool, man. Like, honestly, like... And, like, you know, like that Bruce Lee Band track, Jesse Michaels was on it. It's amazing. The Leftover Crack track, Jesse Michaels is on it. It's amazing. Whatever Jesse Michaels does turns out just amazing. So I'm going to say this is going to be awesome. I know it will be awesome because the guy's got a killer track record. Speaking of killer track records, let's talk about Nicholas Papantonio. This was the guy that was the drummer for Hatebreed from 1996 to 1997. Well, he just got convicted of murder. What happened was Papantonio went to the house of a Larry Dilda with his friend William Countermash. And probably what happened was Dilda owed somebody money, or maybe he did owe somebody money. And the idea was that Papantonio and Countermash were going to rob Dildy's house while Dildy wasn't there. The problem is they pulled up in the car and Dildy was there washing his car. So no one knows exactly what happened, but probably what happened was, at the time, Countermash backed out of the I guess scheme, and Papantonio went in himself and shot Dildy to death and then robbed his house. So Papantonio was convicted, and he's facing sentencing, I think, in May. I think he's facing up to 90 years in jail for first-degree murder. I mean, you know, that's heavy duty business. Couple of things that I found interesting about this, Adam, I'll let you react to it. The first thing is, which really surprised me, on the Punk News Facebook, people were like, why is this punk news? This isn't punk news at all. I thought Hatebreed was well within the punk news game, like the punk rock world. Like, I thought a lot of punk rockers were into Hatebreed. I realized they're a metalcore band, but like people were like, say, you know, like if I wrote, sometimes I'll write an article about, I don't know, like David Bowie or even like, you know, the Beatles, and people like, what do the Beatles have to do with punk rock? But the people were like doing the same thing with Hatebreed, and I genuinely thought that Hatebreed was well within the punk rock world, if you will, even though I don't think they were a great band. But secondly, Adam White, is it fair to report on the story, because this guy was only in the band 20 years ago and he's not on any official recordings, is this newsworthy when someone that was a small part of a big band does something atrocious or something good?
I mean it's newsworthy so long as you qualify it. I mean, there's it's probably not, you know, I don't think it's going to be a chapter in, I don't know, it's not going to have like a subsection on the Hatebreed Wikipedia page or anything like that. But notice how I just said that as if like that was the defining characteristic of your life in art, is what subsections exist on your Wikipedia page. My God. So anyways, yeah, I mean, as long as we qualify it, I mean, it's a story in that it's, you know, It's a story. It's a guy that was connected to that scene at the very least, and definitely was in a band that was big. As far as whether Hatebreed is worthy of speaking about on Punk News, I mean, I feel like we've talked about Hatebreed for ages. You know, yeah. I've never really known why, because I don't like them, but it's not my tastes that determine what we post. So, but you know, there was this whole they're an artifact of that era when all the hardcore bands all started getting really metal-y, and the bubble started to stretch out in the metal direction, and then I think it enveloped some bands like Hatebreed that were, you know, kind of on the edge of that. So, you know, they're just the band that we've talked about in the past, so I guess we're going to talk about them now, at least when, you know, they murder people.
Yeah, everyone loves reading a good story about murder.
The funny thing is that we probably haven't talked about the last three Hatebreed records. But we'll talk about this. But, you know, this is more interesting. I don't actually know that. I don't know anything about Hatebreed. I don't want to get mail from Hatebreed people. If you want to write me angry mail about Hatebreed, send it to john@punknews.org, because I don't care.
Actually, do you guys know this story's connection to the Jesse Michaels story's connection?
No. Jesse Michaels is going to murder this guy?
No, but I referred to Hellraiser, the Jesse Michaels story. Hellraiser was written by Clive Barker. Do you know who wrote the story Hatebreed?
No.
I just forgot his name. The guy's name.
You just said Clive Barker, then you forgot Clive Barker.
I did.
This is the most undramatic point you could have made. Oh, my God. All right. Who's the song? Someone play a song.
I've got a song. Listen, Jesse Michaels is the man. Let's play one of his lesser appreciated bands. For a very brief moment, Jesse Michaels was in a band called Big Rig. They're pretty good. Not mind-blowing, but pretty big, pretty good. Why would I say that? That's so insulting. I'm like, it's not great, but it's good. It's great. Hey, Big Rig was a cool band. They've got only have a 4-song EP, though. They recorded some other music that is still hidden. But let's play a track from their rare 4-song EP. This is Big Rig doing Expansive Heart.
They begin. Everything is fallow, even weeds choke. All the cells are bankrupt because of some broke. Even as the world wide of its own accord, cruel hurricanes cleave like a bitch of swords. Winkle landscapes, no except for drifting ass. One glass knocks my heart like a blade glass. Expensive. Gets clouds, stretch 50,000 bowling fields. All its animals fucked with superhuman vigor and die tied to fertilize the deep woods. My arms alive with war and peace and for the dead. Its rhythm gives good a tidal waves and baby's breath. Old sailors drink bomb on the racing coast and sing the praises of the land that they love the most.
And we are back, and we're going to talk about one of the most divisive bands of the Punk News Podcast, along with one of the current most favorite bands of the Punk News Podcast, including one of Adam White's most favorite bands on the Punk News Podcast. Let's talk about AJJ, formerly Andrew Jackson Jihad, but now they're called AJJ. They covered Pups, Up and Rising Star Pups, song Reservoir. As you know, AJJ last released Christmas Island. Pups got, AJJ's on Side 1 Dummy Records. Pup is now on Side 1 Dummy Records, and they've got a new record coming out pretty soon. Or did it already come out? I think it already came out, actually. Adam, did the Pup album come out yet?
The Pup's new record is called The Dream Is Over, and it is not out yet.
Well, it's coming out soon, and that's on Side One Dummy as well. Greg Simpson, this cover got almost universal hate on Punk News, and I didn't think it was that bad. What do you think?
I think it sounds like they're having fun. I can definitely see why maybe they waited to release it. They're like, I don't know if people are going to like this, but whatever. We're, you know, throwing shit against the wall. It's like they've definitely added, they've added tons of elements to their sound over the years. You know, I mean, they were straight up folk punk, you know, or they were easy to categorize, basically, you know, early in their career. And then they started going more electric. Some synth stuff would come in. They've never gone, I don't think, all synth like this before, have they?
I do. I believe not.
Yeah, and that's why people are so thrown for a loop. But if these guys, I mean, it's a cover song, for one. If they release, like, this is the new single, and it sounded like this, I could see people getting up in arms. But it's a goddamn cover song. Who cares? They're like, let's mess with our synthesizers or our MIDI keyboards or whatever else. I've done the same thing myself. I've never released them to the world, but I've been like, let's see if I took this really cool rock and roll song and made it really dorky with synthesizers. I mean, I don't know. I'm fine with it.
I think that this would have gone over. This would have gone by with really no reaction, but they, with their name change, they sort of like they poked the beehive, and then after you poke the beehive, you release a cover of basically like a rock song that everyone kind of universally liked after you've poked the beehive. And this is just like, you know, everyone's got their fist in the air at this point, and they're just like, hey, JJ, you know, like, first you pissed us off with the name, and now this, like, what other sin will you commit against our good taste? So, you know, this is, it's unfortunate. I mean, I'm a fan of the original. It was kind of fun to hear it played like a weird Devo song, but on the other hand, it wasn't really what I wanted to listen to. So, yeah, you know, and it's weird because, like, that's one of those songs that absolutely gets by on being fast and screamy. Like, there's not a lot of actual lyrics in Reservoir, and it's not the kind of thing that really plays out well if you slow it down and deconstruct it in this way. So it's sort of an odd cover from or it's an odd candidate for a cover from that perspective, because, you know, like, that song is all just like screaming the chorus over and over, and that's what makes it fun. So to not do that is just weird in general. So I feel bad. I mean, actress January Jones is, I feel like they've gotten a little bit more shit than they need to, probably from us too. But you know,
they'll always be always just jerking it, thanks to John last week. That's their name now, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, there you have it, Greg giving bands his name. Let's talk about a band that has nothing to do with about the previous band, La Sera, which features Katie Goodman, who used to be the Vivian. Maybe it's time to drop the Vivian Girls connection. The Vivian Girls have been broken up for like 4 years now. So La Sera, which features Katie Goodman, and La Sera is now a duo with her husband, Todd Weisenbaker. They released a new song. It's called I Need an Angel. It's off their new album, their fourth album, Music for Listening to Music 2. This album was actually pretty divisive across the music world. Pitchfork did not like it. AV Club did not like it. I liked it a whole lot. A lot of other websites liked it a whole lot. A lot of other review websites liked it. Adam White, what do you think of the sweetness, gentleness, but the slight darkness that is La Sera and I Need an Angel?
What was your question? I don't even know how to frame.
Adam, did you like this song? I thought it was a good song. Was this song good to you? Did you like this song?
Wow, did I just go into a fugue state or something? I feel like I did. Totally fuck. Yeah, I did like this song, actually. I haven't listened to a lot of the La Sera stuff in the past, despite being a Vivian Girls fan, so I don't really know how those two things line up. But I really liked this, and I didn't read any of the press about this record. So, what's people's problem?
People's problem is that people's got a problem. That's people's problem. But
dude, Pitchfork gave it a 6.7. That's pretty solid for Pitchfork. I had to go and look. For them, that's like A-.
any more with Pitchfork, if you're above 7.6, it's a positive. If you're below 7.6, it's a spanking. So you might get a 7.3, but that's really like a 4.
No, but I heard someone the other day say that like a 6.8 is the punk rock 9. on Pitchfork. So if you're a band that kind of comes out of that world and you get a 6.8, you're doing pretty good. But I don't know. Like I like this a lot. I like this song. It's catchy. It's incredibly like amiable. Like I can't see why anyone would have a particular problem with this. And now I have to go back and listen to this whole record because I very much enjoyed it. So yeah, you dicks. This is cool.
I've had it for I've had it for a while just because Polyvinyl is awesome and they are awesome at giving me stuff. And I knew, John, I knew you were going to take it. And Lacera is, it's a band that, it's good, Sunday morning music, waking up music. It's kind of chill, melodic, But maybe, I'm kind of surprised, actually, John, that you like them so much. Because it doesn't assault your senses and thrash wildly about with big hair and multiple bassists.
well played. No, I like gentle music. I like gentle music that has a soul to it or has some energy to it, even if that energy is slow. I think Lacera succeeds, particularly on this record, but on all their records, in that the music has a soul, is gentle, has a lot of melody that Greg Simpson likes. But there's a certain trueness to it, a certain realness to it, and a certain oomph, a certain soul to it, like Otis Redding. Otis Redding is a thrash around, but he's got soul. This record's got not this. This record has soul, not Otis Redding's soul. More, I guess you would say, California.
Nancy Sinatra soul.
Yes, I would say so. Well put. So anyway, I think this record is great. I think people smash it around a little bit because Katie Goodman's been doing her thing for a little while now. She's good at it, and I think people saw her as a good target to smash it down, because particularly in Pitchfork, because she's not some hip hop guy that just says really offensive things, and then Pitchfork makes it seem like that he's making some progressive statement. You know what I mean? Not that I'm against that kind of music either, but I'm just saying she's not that, and she's not some person in their basement that makes just garbage sounding music and they're like, oh, this is great noise music. I think they saw a talented person that makes fairly traditional music that's very good, that was safe for them to smash to make them seem cool. But I don't always want to talk about Pitchfork when we talk about bands. This record's good, man, and I don't even want to talk about how it got negative reviews, because it's a really good record. It's a successful record, and I'm excited to see what Katie Goodman does next. But this record really is her. Well, this record is Katie Goodman finally embracing what it is to be Katie Goodman and not putting on any, I guess, angles on her music, and I think it's fantastic. Let's talk about a band that is putting angles on the music. Let's talk about Nerve Herder. Nerve Herder is back, and the Punk News crew loves Nerve Herder. This was one of the big epifat bands from the 90s, and the Punk News audience went wild when we posted a new Nerve Herder track. The track is called The Girl Who Listened to Rush. The song is about a girl who listened to Rush, and fittingly, the actual song itself, and this is true, was mixed on the board that Rush used in the 70s to mix all their gigantic hits in the 70s. I definitely have an opinion on this, but Greg Simpson, I know you're a Nerve Herder kind of guy. I don't know if you're a Rush kind of guy or not. What do you think of this?
I own Moving Pictures. That's it. I got respect for Rush. I mean, they're all very talented musicians. Neil Peart is like one of those. When you grow up drumming, you're all supposed to like him. I mean, now I know he has way too many fucking drums, but he's a good fucking drummer. And I would listen to Rush for the drumming almost exclusively. But as far as Nerve Herder goes, they were a band I was huge into. And fucking Honest-On's Records, those bands, they were at the time almost I don't know if you consider them second tier fat bands, but I always loved them. My mom owns Nerve Herder Records, and I'm saying that as a positive. My mom has good taste.
Your mom owns Nerve Herder Records?
She would let us play whatever we wanted in the car. And me and my sister both loved, I don't know if you call them a Ramones core band. They kind of are. They're just goofy. That kind of style of pop punk. And my mom has since bought her own copy of the Nerve Herder first album, as well as a bunch of Me First and Gimme Gimme's albums. stuff we used to play in the car. Anyway, they're just a fun band. They are hard to hate, unless you're a jock, because they're dorks and you might pick on them because they're nerdy or whatever. But I was a nerd. I like nerdy pop punk. I don't know. Can I play a song of theirs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a new Nerf Herder song about Rush. I would like to play an old Nerf Herder song about Van Halen off of their first album. So without any introduction, let's just go ahead and play Nerf Herder, Van Halen.
We're back. That was Van Halen by Nerf Herder. John, I have a mystery story.
Ooh, mysteries. Ooh, let me guess. Is it about Morrissey?
Yes.
Wow.
Is it really?
It is.
Really?
It fucking is. So, this is the reason why earlier in the show I completely flaked out, because I was looking at something on my phone and I saw this and it took away where my brain was. There is a band, John.
Yes.
This band takes the music of brooding British icon Smith's frontman Morrissey, and they remake it into Mexican mariachi music.
We have got to hear this.
Band,
we have
John,
got to hear
this band is called Mexrecy.
This is wonderful.
Mexrecy is fronted by Mexican musician and Grammy-nominated producer Camilo Lara. And I was listening really briefly to the Mexrecy song, Estuvo Bien, which is basically Suede Head, and I'll put the link and the video in the show when it goes. But just know this exists, John, and it is now what your life is all about.
I'm gonna interview this guy. I'm gonna write a review. We're from now on, Punk News is gonna be MexRecyMuse.org.
This I think it should be Moriachi.
That's pretty good.
That would have been also good. But hey, whatever. Mexican Morrissey is a thing. John, do our last story.
How funny is it that I guessed that out of all the infinite options that are the band?
I assumed that, like, whatever I saw somehow, like, you also just saw on Facebook. And I was just like, oh, fuck. Okay, you see the same things I do. But no, that was just a good guess.
Man. Anyways. Let's see if Adam White can guess what this story is about. Devo. Devo. Well, actually, this story makes me kind of mad, but not for the reason people might think of. Devo has donated proceeds of the sale of their single Whip It to PETA. And what PETA is going to do with the money is to run a campaign to free tigers and other large cats from circuses. As you might know, Barnum and I think Ringling Brothers. They said that they're not going to use elephants in their circus act anymore. So it looks like PETA and Devo are trying to get them to drop the use of, you know, tigers and lions and large cats in their act as well. And the idea behind, like, I guess the proceeds of the sales is that those animals are whipped at the circus. So the Whip It, the proceeds from that song are used to fund this campaign. And it looks like this was like a one-time donation though. So I feel like if you buy Whip It now on iTunes, I guess, then it still won't like go to the cats, because I think it's like a one-time donation. And this is what made me mad about this is, man, sketchy press releases. I cannot stand the sketchy press release. Adam, Greg, can I get a witness?
Oh yeah.
This was one of the kind of press releases where I had to read it like six times to figure out what the hell was going on. Like being real, real, like PETA's being like real unclear and stuff. And so I don't know if they've already made the donation or if it was linked to iTunes or something else, or they're still making donations. It was written in a way to be as confusing as possible. And I still don't know exactly what's going on. I know that either Devo gave money to PETA or will give money to PETA, somehow linked to the song Whip It. But the press release was incredibly vague about how the money is generated and when it will be delivered to PETA and the size of the money and even what the money is specifically going to be used for. So listen, PETA and anybody that's trying to get news organizations to read your press release, don't do the sketchy press release, because it always gets found out. And when I or anybody else, you know, has to spend time to dig through it and they figure out what's really going on, then they're probably going to be mad at you and not want to run your story. Whereas if you just send in a true press release that might not be as explosive as your trumped up press release, it's more likely to run. So PETA, come on, get your act together. Anyway, I don't know. I guess I thought this was nice. A lot of people have a lot of different ideas on PETA. I don't know a whole lot enough about PETA to really make an educated stance, but you know, I mean, I think it's nice that Devo is trying to get lions out of circuses, because I guess lions don't need to be in circuses. It probably is pretty cruel towards them, I would guess.
Yeah. Hey, when's the last time you guys went to a fucking circus?
Like 20 years ago. Yeah, like 20 years ago. Right. Like 25 years ago.
Adam, you too? Have you taken your kids to a circus?
No, I don't know if there are circuses around here anymore. I mean, we're Canada. It's all fucking Cirque du Soleil up here.
It's moose it's, that they use. They whip yeah. they whip mooses. meese. But as far as I could, like, are they really still whipping them? I'm just picturing like the old like a cartoon or something, where yeah, and he's got like a chair he's holding down and he's got the whip. But I feel like they just kind of like are trying to scare. I mean, I think it's abuse either way, but that they're trying to like scare the big cats and they're whipping at them. Or like making noise or something. I didn't think they were really actually whipping them. Not that it isn't abuse in some other way. Are they really whipping the damn tigers?
I don't think so, man. Because I think if you whip the tiger, he would jump on you and rip your neck out.
Yeah, he'd fucking kill you.
Well,
it's like in The Revenant. He shoots the bear, but that thing still is coming.
I would have to imagine that, like, would you not learn to fear the whip by at some point being whipped?
I don't know if would a whip hurt a lion? I mean, lions are pretty tough.
Yeah, their skin is thick.
No, it's not a rhinoceros. Like it's a big muscular thing, but it's still like skin and flesh and hair. Like I imagine it would hurt like hell. That said, I'm not probably. A lion.
I don't know. I was just hoping we could straighten that out. But I guess if PETA's, I don't know, maybe PETA sends people into the circuses to see everything that's going on, I would imagine.
I'm kind of okay with, like, PETA directing their attention at, like, circus animals as opposed to, like, I don't know, like badgering, like, normal society. So I'm okay with, you know, that's an okay use for PETA, I guess.
I normally have no problem with them, but they have shit. If you look at their website, there's shit about owning pets. Basically, they're like, you shouldn't own pets. I'm like, okay. There are already these dogs and cats in shelters that are alive right now. You're saying I shouldn't adopt one of them? And then other stuff about how you should train them. Basically, like, you should not train them and just let them be bad, because in training them, you're somehow abusing them. It's really bizarre. Like, the length that they take some of these things to, and I'm all about animal rights, but I would rather rescue some animals and have them live a nice life and be trained so they don't run out into the street and get hit by a car. It's just really bizarre. I don't know if you guys have ever looked at their website, but there's some crazy shit on there.
I think you're kind of right. I mean, in a way, I think PETA, it's kind of like the uninformed anarcho-punks. You know, they're like, yeah, man, like, they'll be like, they'll say something like, yeah, man, like, cops suck. We shouldn't have cops at all. You know, it's like, right. So you just want it to be like Sudan, where people are like shooting each other and no one can do anything about it, you know? We're even more proud. They're like, yeah, man, like, child support sucks, man. You shouldn't have to pay people. The government can't make you pay people money. It's like, have you thought this through? And so I feel as though, like, PETA says things that, I guess, without really thinking about it, sound good. Like, you shouldn't force your dog to poop outside. He's a wild animal. But dogs aren't wild animals. They've been domesticated for 10,000 years. They've evolved to be creatures that work in collection with human beings. So to, like, not care for your animal isn't doing it a favor. It's making it starve to death. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of PETA's thing is ill-informed, and I want to say they're good-intentioned but ill-informed, but I think a lot of times PETA isn't even well-intentioned. They're just trying to be dicks. You know, I don't know.
Also, something that we don't want mail about is PETA. Don't write us mail about PETA.
Send me all the mail about PETA you want. I don't care.
I don't.
They never gave me an @punknews email address, so you can't send it to me. Don't give out my personal email.
Show up at outdoor velour shows and talk about PETA.
Yeah, listen, whoever protests outdoor velour shirts on behalf of PETA, outdoor velour shows on behalf of PETA, I will send you free punk new swag.
Don't throw paint on my velour. It's not made of an animal.
No paint, only signs. You can only protest outdoor velour shows with signs. It says PETA hates outdoor velour or something like that, you know. If you do that,
we have a dog in the press photos, but he's on a leash, so I guess that's cruel.
And send us a picture of that, and I will send you free punk new swag.
Nice.
Do we even have punk new swag anymore?
I've got a punk new swag bag filled with random stuff. I've got a little bit of swag.
I have I have two t-shirts that I have both worn a million times and don't really fit me anymore. So if anyone wants some, like, large, worn, pretty gross punk new shirts, you can win those.
My armpit holes in the old punk new shirt got so big. I finally had to, like, I wore it with armpit holes for a while. I'm just like, fuck yeah. And then John made the new punk new shirts. And I'm like, okay, I guess I finally throw that one away. That Mr. Justin August sent to me in, like, 2005.
And I never got one. I've never gotten any punk new swag. So I'm still kind
of got a strange, slow and old shirt.
Those shirts are problematic. Those were limited release. So it's probably okay that you didn't get one.
Why are those shirts problematic?
We didn't. So what we're talking about is, so during the One Fest in Gainesville, we decided that we were going to have merch and do merch. And we decided this kind of late. And we also decided it according to the way that decisions get made at Punk News, which is a bunch of people sort of talked about it for a while, but no one was actually in charge of it. And then actual money had to become involved. So someone had to stick their neck out and actually put some money down, and none of us have any money, and somehow we had some merch at the last minute. So so we actually had, like,
that sounds really shady, Adam.
Yeah, well, hey, that's how things work. No, but, like, I think Eric at Night Owl's Print Shop hooked us up, like, right at the last moment. But it was just sort of like, like, we need some shirts now. Like, whatever you've got, get some shirts. So we got these white shirts, and they say punknews.org and Strange Show at Old on them, but they're incredibly thin. It's like they're like on, like, it's like, I don't know, it's like, it should be like lingerie material or something like that. Like, it's sheer stuff, right?
And nipples showing.
I get the impression that you know, over at Night Owls, they're just like, you know, you guys want shirts. We've just printed stuff for Fest for all these bands. There is no more inventory except these, like, kind of odd shirts. And we were just like, whatever, give us something. So that's what we ended up last minute putting out, which is way more our problem than it ever was Night Owls, because we totally just, like, approached them, like, at the last minute. And so they pulled miracles getting us anything. But the shirt material is pretty weird. So,
I thought you were going to say they were problematic in that, like, Max Bemis from Say Anything, like, put some sort of copyright on the phrasing.
No,
Strange,
like,
Slow, and Old, just so we could never say it again.
It's like, it's kind of see-through almost. Like, I have one. Right. I like, yeah, it.
Oh, but so they're sexy is what you're saying.
It's too sexy for what we were trying to do.
Well, listen, Punk News is as sexy as it can get. I'm thinking about doing t-shirts maybe later this year, maybe not. If you'd be interested in, well, I don't know what I'm thinking about. Anyways, write us at podcast@punknews.org if you can contain our sexiness till next week. And if you can.
What do you think about Punk News assless chaps?
To Brendan Kelly, you know what I mean? Like punk news doesn't need to be overtly sexual to be sexy. So listen, I hope you can hold our sexiness within till next week. And if you can't, there's always the Punk News Podcast archives that you can use to get sexed up on your own. So, you know, if you want to AJJ yourself, by all means, listen to the Punk News Podcast and do that. We'll see you next week.